more than muddied in recent weeks. Last year, the state warned residents using those wells that the water was unsafe to drink. Then it reversed itself. Recently, the McCrory administration alleged that a state toxicologist, Dr. Kenneth Rudo, who took issue with that reversal, lied under oath. That was quickly followed by an open editorial written by State Health Director Dr. Randall Williams and Tom Reeder, an assistant secretary in the State Department of Environmental Quality, essentially accusing Rudo of judging water quality by standards he set himself and portraying Rudo as a renegade scientist who stirred up unwarranted fears of cancer tied to drinking water. After reading that open editorial, the state's chief epidemiologist, Dr. Megan Davies, submitted a scathing letter of resignation saying that it was the Department of Environmental Quality that was lying.
That open editorial signed by Randall Williams and Tom Reeder misleads the public.
Further, in a conversation with Frank Statio on WUNC's The State of Things, Davies alleged that her boss, Dr. Randall Williams, and Tom Reeder know how the department reaches scientific conclusions, and it outraged her that they would characterize this as a conclusion of a rogue scientist.
Those two people sent out a document that conveyed that a lone scientist was behaving independently on his own whim when people's health and lives were in affected by those recommendations. That was insulting misrepresentation of how the Division of Public Health works and how the Department of Health and Human Services work.
Dr. Davies says that their process is to use science in concert with the law, and she explained that involved technical process this way.
So our first step was to go through the Coal Ash Management Act with the department and make our best interpretation of the language of what was being required in there. And the conclusion, after much discussion and engagement of everybody, including the department council, was that the Coal Ash Management Act references the North Carolina Administrative Code 15A-02L, and that rule tells you specifically that when you're looking at a cancer endpoint, i.e., a constituent that can cause cancer, or there's toxicologic evidence that links it to cancer, that you use a 1 to 1 million increase in cancer risk to set a level. And that's what we did. We followed the law and the rule, a North Carolina law and a North Carolina rule. We vetted it entirely through the department. There were two toxicologists at the Department of Environmental Quality who were part of that technical calculation to come up with the particular level used, and then the two toxicologists in the Department of Health and Human Services Occupational Epidemiology Branch, which was under me, reviewed those calculations, agreed with them. We vetted our approach with CDC, and then we proceeded after multiple meetings with officials in DEQ on the set path.
The governor's office is characterizing this as a disagreement among scientists, but that is not how the scientists see it, which raises important questions like, just how safe is our water, and can we believe what we're being told? Here to talk about that is Sam Perkins, the Catawba River Keeper. Michael Tomsic has been covering this along with others for WFAE News, and because all of this centers around Duke Energy's coal ash storage sites, we've invited Duke Energy spokesperson Aaron Colbert to be with us. Welcome to all three of you. Good to see you.
Morning. Morning.
We extended an invitation to Dr. Megan Davies to be here, but she is no longer doing media interviews, so we thank WUNC again for the use of the interview they were able to get on the state of things last week. DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality, turned down our request for a representative to be on the program. We also made a request with the Department of Health and Human Services, and they also declined. Michael, has something like this ever happened before in which we have experts working in a particular area of state government whose expertise we should rely on come into conflict with bureaucrats who say, no, they're wrong?
Odds are the answer to that is yes. In recent history, nothing immediately pops to mind. And Ken Rudo, who you mentioned earlier, Mike, you know, in his deposition, part of which has become public through a lawsuit, I mean, he says that the the disagreement that led to the second letter going out saying that the water is safe to drink. He called that an unprecedented step. For that analysis, the previous analysis that that both departments had agreed on as far as what was this level, for that to then be for the standard to be changed and to send a second letter saying actually your water is safe to drink, he referred to that as coming out of nowhere and as an unprecedented step.
Dr. Kenneth Rudo is the toxicologist. There's an epidemiologist involved in this, and there's the toxicologist. He's the toxicologist who accused DHHS of knowingly misleading the public about the safety of drinking water, saying the state should never have retracted the do not drink advisories. And then this open editorial by Health Director Dr. Randall Williams and Tom Reeder with DEQ called Rudo's findings questionable and inconsistent as scientific conclusions, which created unnecessary fear and confusion about drinking water safety. Those are their words. Then Rudo's boss not only backed him up, but resigned in protest, saying that she could not work for a department or administration that deliberately misled the public. Once again, the governor's office characterizes this as a disagreement among scientists. At the center of this, though, is something called chromium 6, or hexavalent chromium, and something called vanadium, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Is it considered safe in drinking water? Where the source of those compounds, or is the, I'm trying to think of the question here. We know that those compounds are present in coal ash, but we also know that those compounds are present in nature.
Hexavalent chromium, not necessarily. The CDC and other entities have said that you really don't find hexavalent chromium occurring naturally. And what's interesting here is that, yes, there is a federal Safe Drinking Water Act. Over the years, the federal government has set some floors, some minimum regulations, including for total chromium, which includes hexavalent and trivalent. That standard was developed in 1991 based on science that was even older than that. And so it's a standard that the EPA has acknowledged needs to be updated. And it's one that, with the North Carolina General Statute that you heard Dr. Davies cite, and it wasn't just her, just Ruta, there were multiple other people within Health and Human Services who use this. There is a formula that can be used to figure out an appropriate health level and using some EPA guidance as well to figure out what is the safe level for a contaminant, even if it's not explicitly listed in the 15A2L listings. And that's how they reach the 0.07 micrograms per liter of hexavalent chromium.
And we know that hexavalent chromium is a carcinogen?
Yes.
How do we know that?
We know that from years of study, although it's one that has more recently become concern from incidents like what you had in Hinckley, California, and it's only more recently been looked at. But what's interesting, if you look at something like lead that has been studied for decades, I mean, really you could say centuries, you look at the lead levels, even going back a few centuries, that were thought to be safe in water or blood. And we have come down 10 to almost 20 times on what we figured out is the safe level. And even now, we know through research that less than what the standard is can still cause issues for children.
Is there, when you say standard, are you talking about how much of this substance can be in the water or your
safely
overall exposure, your longevity of exposure to it, or both?
Well, those are things that go into consideration in developing the standard.
And there's actually, just today, there's a group, the Environmental Watch Group, that is requesting that the Obama administration update its federal standard on hexavalent chromium or chromium-6. To follow up a little bit on what Sam was saying as well, as he pointed out, the CDC, some other groups, have always said that typically or in general, we know about hexavalent chromium as something that is man-made. There has been some research recently that shows that it is possible that in a geological process, some kind of a natural process, that it could result in hexavalent chromium. One of the things that Dr. Davies actually pointed out in her deposition that was also part of this lawsuit is that they were still trying to determine whether in North Carolina it could be a naturally occurring thing. But regardless, the bulk of the science, you know, to this point is more clear, mm-hmm. I think it would be fair to say, on it being not a naturally occurring thing.
And on top
of
that,
I would actually, you know, bring a little bit more light to that. There has been some additional study that demonstrates that not just that it's possible, but actually hexavalent chromium is naturally occurring at low levels all across the nation. You know, the American Water Works Association did some research several years ago that really investigated levels of hex chrome in municipal drinking water supplies all across the nation, and there is really compelling evidence that it's found in rocks and soils at low levels that influences groundwater
so,
and, of course, private let wells.
Me, so hold on. Aaron Colbert has the unenviable position of being here from Duke Energy. We know that hexavalent chromium is found in coal ash. We also know that, as you just said, it is naturally occurring in some instances. Is it Duke's position that the source of the hexavalent chromium that has been found in the drinking water of these wells around the state is from natural sources and not from coal ash? Is that your position?
Yes, that's exactly right, Mike. And let me help explain that just a little bit, because, you know, there's been a lot of confusion about this for plant residents, for folks who are drinking both municipal water supplies and who rely on wells. You know, we know that more than 3 million residents, North Carolinians, rely on groundwater for their drinking. So this is something that applies not just around coal plants or ash basins in North Carolina, but it's really much broader than that. We have done a lot of extensive study, and not just we at Duke Energy, but we have brought in some of the nation's foremost experts to come in and really research this issue to make sure that we fully understand all that we can.
And you paid for these experts?
Absolutely.
Can we trust something that Duke Energy paid for?
Absolutely. And I think it's important to note that these folks have professional licenses.
Yes,
that they
I
have
know,
to
but,
stand
it, but you paid for it. So why should we trust things that Duke Energy pay for, as opposed to a third party, a disinterested third party paying for it?
Well, we would certainly welcome third parties to also study the issue, but to get the work done and to be able to deliver on the deadlines that we have and the responsibilities in the North Carolina Coal Ash Management Act, we have to have reports and studies completed by certain dates. We have to commission experts to do the work.
The reports that have been issued by the state, the scientists in the state who say that this is a problem, not the ones who say this is not a problem, are they saying that the elevated levels of hexavalent chromium in the water in these wells is from coal ash, or is it it's just there? What are they saying about where the source of it?
The people with Health and Human Services don't really make a conclusion of the source. Generally, in any health risk evaluation, you have DEQ get the data, the same thing for fish testing and a lot of other areas, and then they hand the data over to DHHS that then looks at the health risks associated with those levels. What DEQ has claimed is, like what we just heard from Aaron, is that these are naturally occurring levels akin to what you find in municipal drinking water. And so what we did and what our experts have done, but what I personally did first and foremost, was went and got what's called the UCMR3 data. So larger municipalities like Charlotte, like Raleigh, Durham, have to go through and test their drinking water for an expanded list of contaminants, including hexavalent chromium. And if you look at that data and you compare it to the data in people's wells, you have tens to even hundreds of times the levels of hexavalent chromium.
But is that an apples-to-apples comparison? Because the well water is coming from groundwater, which is seeped, it's underground. And,
yeah.
And the drinking water in the Charlotte system comes from Mountain Island Lake, which is part of the Catawba River system, which is surface water. Isn't an apples-to-apples comparison?
It's certainly a fair comparison, because it's the comparison that the state made. When they sent out the second letter saying it is okay to drink this water, they said it is as safe as municipal water.
And the two are connected. Surface water gets replenished in large part from groundwater. The two are connected.
Okay. It's going to be a very complicated and long conversation, but it'll only last an hour. And we're coming right back with more in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Firehouse Casual Living Stores, serving the Carolinas for nearly 40 years with branded outdoor patio seating and dining furniture. Showrooms located on Johnston Road and W.T. Harris Boulevard. Details at fhcasual.com. And Carolina's healthcare system's HealthWorks, working with employers to improve the bottom line through innovative employee health solutions. Carolinashealthcare.org/HealthWorks. Republicans and Democrats have nominated candidates that rank among the most unpopular in recent history. But rather than holding their noses and voting for the least objectionable, some voters are taking a serious look at third-party candidates, and those candidates are getting media attention this time around. Are our perceptions of third-party candidates changing, and how might that change the election? We look at that tomorrow on this program at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Americans have accumulated $1.3 trillion in student debt. College graduates can earn more over time compared to high school graduates, but many now question the net benefit of a college degree, the student debt crisis, and plans from the presidential candidates.
The Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Tux on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the controversy raging in Raleigh over whether or not the elevated levels of hexavalent chromium found in drinking water wells near coal ash ponds are in fact from coal ash ponds, and whether or not the water is safe to drink. We're here with Sam Perkins, Catawba Riverkeeper, Michael Tomzik from WFAE News, who's helped cover this story since it's been unfolding, and Aaron Colbert, who's the spokesperson for Duke Energy. I want to go to something that you talked about just a second ago, Michael, and that is the comparison of these wells and the water in them to the safety of the water that we drink from the Catawba River. And the federal safe drinking water standard for chromium is 100 parts per billion. I think that's right. According to the open letter from state agency officials, toxicologist Kenneth Rudo recognized that when he told residents earlier that their drinking water was safe because it met those standards. And then he reversed himself using, they say, his own standard, which is 1,400 times lower than the federal standard. Now, Dr. Megan Davies says, she's the state epidemiologist who resigned last week because of all of this, says this was part of her problem with the open editorial, which she called inflammatory and misleading. And again, she told WUNC's Frank Statio that the standards Rudo used applied to the wells tested as set forth in the Coal Ash Wells Management Act.
Normally, wells in North Carolina are not tested for this particular substance, hexavalent chromium, that's become the center of attention. But we were acting under a law that had been passed and took effect January 2015.
And a particular direction to look at those wells only and not all 900,000 wells in the state, as I understand.
Yes, absolutely.
So, using the Coal Ash Management Act, has the state changed the threshold for chromium, hexavalent chromium in the water?
I wouldn't say it was even from the Coal Ash Management Act. It's the 15A 2L standards. It's in the administrative code where they say where you're going to regulate contaminants and how and at what levels. It actually lays out six different calculations because a state can, of course, not have any standard lower or less stringent than the federal standard. And what it says in the general statute, so this is what Rudo, Davies, and multiple other people in DHHS agreed with, is that you shall calculate six different ways what the standard would be, and you shall use the lowest of those six calculations. And that includes the EPA-guided calculation that Ken Rudo and Dr. Davies and others used.
So has anyone checked at random the water in wells other than those near Duke Energy coal ash depositories to see what their levels of hexavalent chromium are?
DEQ has done some testing. There needs to be a lot more. Hexavalent chromium is something that should be tested every time.
But in that testing, did they find significant levels or levels that approach those that are near the coal ash pond?
No, they are statistically very, very different. And the other problem with figuring out what a true background well is, and this has been a bit of an argument in the engineering reports, is what is truly background? Because one of the biggest questions is what hasn't been exposed to coal ash? We know that over the years, because Allen, Plant Allen, other coal ash sites generated so much ash, they were offering it up to use as fill. So people who had gullies and erosion used coal ash as fill and have created a lot of issues that people may not realize across the area.
So let me make sure that I understand this. You're saying that in the wells that they have tested that are not near coal ash ponds, the levels of hexavalent chromium are negligible?
They are st- they are very different from what they're finding. I mean, orders of magnitude different from what they're finding in people's wells around Allen or Buck.
I think Aaron disagrees with you.
Thanks, Mike. I will say that the DEQ did some background testing, as Sam mentioned. That was actually a year ago this month, and they released findings from 24 wells that were near coal ash basins but not close enough to have been impacted. And they did try to look for records to make sure that that wasn't influenced by any structural fills or other types of fills. And they had to send do not drink advisories to 20 of the 24 because they had exceedances for vanadium and hexavalent chromium above this threshold. So there is clear evidence that we have wells in North Carolina that have naturally occurring levels that would exceed these thresholds, more than just beyond ash basins. You know, I've got some friends in Raleigh who have a well who have 9 parts per billion of hexavalent chromium, and they're nowhere near a coal facility.
In these coal ash, the wells near coal ash ponds, how much greater on average is the level of hexavalent chromium found in that water versus the well water far away from these coal ash ponds?
Again, you're talking about at least one order of magnitude in many cases, because you're looking at, and while there were some
what
cases.
What does that mean, one order of magnitude?
Okay, so the I think the highest level that it's been found, there are a number around some of the sites that have more than 10, even more than 20 parts per billion. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about samples coming back, and that would trigger a health risk evaluation even if they exceeded 0.07. Even the surface water data shows that in some cases you have more than 0.07, but we're talking about 0.08 as opposed to 20.
So,
you know, I will say across the state, there were about 400 wells tested, and maybe a handful, half a dozen to a dozen, exceeded 10 parts per billion. So he's really speaking about the most extreme cases, not the average.
And just to chime in, I mean, how many total, to put this into some perspective, how many total letters have gone out? I mean, how many well owners are we talking about who have received these letters?
Hundreds. Around Allen alone, approximately 130 residences.
Hmm. There's about 400 across the state that were tested.
Aaron, I know that you want to talk about why Duke Energy feels that you're not the source.
I think it's important to kind of just bring everybody, you know, back a little bit to the history of how this all began. In my mind, there's sort of two parallel issues that we're working through as a state. You know, what is the most appropriate level of hexavalent chromium to be safe in drinking water? Mm-hmm. And did Duke Energy have any impact on these individuals' wells? And they're, you know, closely intertwined, but not really the same. So in terms of water safety, you know, from a Duke Energy perspective, we have to leave that to the health experts, to the state policy experts. That's not really our bailiwick. But we do ask a lot of the same questions that neighbors are asking us, and it's important that to recognize that North Carolina has among the most aggressive and protective standards for groundwater in the whole nation. You know, our groundwater standard here in North Carolina is 10 parts per billion for total chromium. So that accounts for potentially all of that being hexavalent.
Well, speaking of standards, Sam, you say that the state initially used newer research that had lower acceptable levels of hexavalent chromium for drinking water, but has now changed the standard. Explain that.
And that's going back to when they calculated, as is one of the ways that you are supposed to figure out what the standard should be under the general statute. And then they went back and said, well, we have a federal level of 100 parts per billion, so therefore we deem it's acceptable. That's the abandoning that we're citing. As far as the source of it, part of this process since the Coal Ash Management Act has been to perform engineering reports starting in 2014. And those engineering reports, if there are engineers out there, I encourage you to review them, have produced some fascinating information. The executive summaries, we disagree with the conclusions, because if you look back at the raw data and you look at the gradients, you look at the direction of groundwater flow around the coal ash sites, which have completely really double enveloped these communities. I mean, they're surrounded on three sides by coal ash, like at Plant Allen. You have good data that actually shows there is an impact. You have the hydraulic gradient. Now, in some of the modeling that was performed and that our experts looked at, and yes, we paid for those experts, but these are not experts with interest in getting long-term contracts with Duke Energy. They looked at the data and they said, or they looked at the models and they said, there are no flow boundaries here to where they wouldn't possibly show there is an impact going in this direction toward these people's wells. And what it did show was a lot of contamination ongoing toward the Catawba River. So either way you look at it, there is contamination going on, whether it's a public drinking water reservoir or people's wells.
So if you tested the water, and I know you have, the Charlotte drinking water supply, which is out of Mountain Iowa Lake for the most part, what would you find in terms of the levels of hexavalent chromium?
It really depends on when you test and where you test. Generally, the water around Charlotte has been good, and we know the hexavalent chromium data for Charlotte, and it's right around what the standard is, which is that 0.07.
Where do they test?
There's testing of both raw water and treated water.
I was going to say, wouldn't the best place to test be to go to the kitchen and turn the tap on and collect that water and test that water?
That is one of the ways that they do perform the test.
And what would you find? Acceptable levels of hexavalent chromium?
I remember a number of the results were less than 0.03, which is the detection limit of the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking, again, around to non-detect to the level of 0.07.
So you combined EPA and state data to see if the claim that well water in the wells near these coal ash repositories is as safe as city water, which I believe is what the state is now saying, and what did you discover?
If you look at the 9 of the biggest municipalities which have to do the UCMR3 reporting, so they have to test for hexavalent chromium unlike the smaller municipalities, their levels are anywhere from 0.03 to 0.08. around the state, so Charlotte, Raleigh, Durham, Asheville. And that's why this notion that what's coming out of people's wells around coal ash sites is the same as what's coming out of our tap from Charlotte's treated drinking water system is completely bogus. And I cannot figure out, except for a little bit of cherry picking for a couple of sites in Raleigh where there is really bad, maybe concern for industry being nearby causing the issue. We don't know how they've drawn that conclusion.
And you found that hexavalent chromium levels in wells near two Duke plants, Allen in the Gaston County, Buck in Rowan County, were more than 20 times higher than average for 11 public water systems, including Charlotte?
As much as 319 times, yes.
And again, that's just two or three individuals. He's picking the most extreme. I mean, I think it's really important to reiterate what we mentioned earlier. Surface water tends to have less hexavalent chromium than groundwater. So it's really not apples to apples to compare a municipal water supply to groundwater sources. But it's also important to point out...
Is that because it's more diluted?
It's because you're having a higher influence from natural geology. Groundwater naturally is going to have more influence from natural geology, and it hasn't had a chance to oxidize to the trivalent form. But in a general sense, from the studies that we have, you know, had national experts come to perform to be able to meet state deadlines and be able to inform state regulatory decisions with good data, we know that the flow direction of groundwater near ash basins is flowing away from private wells. A major indicator of potential coal ash impact is a substance called boron. Neighbors closest to ash basins do not see elevated levels of boron, which is a much better key indicator than hexavalent chromium.
What about that?
There has been boron seen. Now, the boron standard is 700 parts per billion, so has there been a health exceedance? There has not. And if you look at the hydraulic gradients and you look at what was put in the executive summary for these engineering reports, there was a cherry picking of the points where at the perimeter of the site it shows water's moving off site. But when you move in on the site closer to the homes, you see hydraulic gradients actually going toward the neighborhood. And it's because when you pump groundwater, you create a void, and water needs to rush in to replace that. And
we
adjacent, you have
unlined. In the modeling. And it doesn't, there's no evidence that supports that that's actually occurring.
These wells near the Allen plant in Gaston County affect residents in Belmont. So how are they handling the situation? What's being done out there?
It's scary for those folks right now because a lot of them have children, and they are living on 20 ounces of bottled water at a time. And it's not even just the inconvenience of living your life 20 ounces of water at a time. It becomes a safety issue.
Are you saying they cannot drink the water from their wells?
They cannot drink the water from their wells.
Saying that they have been advised not to drink the water from their wells?
They have been both advised to and not to drink the water from their wells. By the state, yes.
So they're erring on the side of caution and not drinking the water.
Well, Dr. Rudo has continued to say he would not drink the water. Dr. Davies had said that she would not advise that they start drinking the water out of their wells. So, and I personally, with a small child, would not feel comfortable drinking that water day in, day out.
So at first they were told the water is safe to drink, then they were told the other way around. The water is not safe to drink, then they were told the water is safe to drink. Is Duke Energy supplying, as they are in some other areas, those folks near the Allen plant with bottled water?
Yes, we are. We are currently supplying about 400 well owners across the state with temporary bottled water.
But you're asserting that the well water coming from into Belmont near the Allen plant is safe to drink, correct?
Well, Duke Energy does not make judgments about water safety. So that's something that we would leave to state policy representatives, to state health professionals. But let's walk back a year ago when these letters first came out. We had not yet completed all of the engineering analyses and the scientific studies. So we said, you know what? Let's go ahead and provide bottled water to these individuals who have received this guidance from the state to give them peace of mind. Mm-hmm. We've since then completed the studies that we were just talking about. That gives us really clear confidence that we are not impacting neighbors' wells.
Would you drink the water?
Yes.
Would Lynn Good drink the water?
Yes. And I will tell you, I do. I have two small children of my own. I'm on municipal water supplies.
Would you bottle that water and put it in company water coolers?
Well, it's important to note that we still see no evidence that ash basins are impacting folks, but we understand that this is something that has caused them a great deal of consternation and confusion.
Yeah.
So even though we still see no evidence, we still continue to provide that water. So people wonder why. Why are you doing that? It's important for us to be able to provide them peace of mind, to give them comfort, some stability whenever they're getting a lot of conflicting information.
Would Duke Energy bottle the water coming out of those wells and put it in company water coolers?
Again, it's not Duke Energy's responsibility to make safety decisions.
I'm not asking you to make a safety decision. I'm asking you if you would drink the water.
I would drink the water, and I have been drinking the water. But it's important to remember that, you know, something that we talked about a while ago, ash basin neighbors are being held to a standard that no other well owners, not only in North Carolina, but across the entire nation, have been held to.
Is that true?
Well, in the state, it actually does apply, because that's what the general statute prescribes. And I know it's easy to say that absolutely I or my children would drink the water, but I would really challenge that, because it's one of those things where it's easy to say, but when you actually have to do it day in and day out and you're thinking about what you're putting into your children's bodies, I would say that wouldn't actually happen. And the other thing I would say with regard to having an influencer deciding on health issues, we do know that Duke Energy met with Department of Health and Human Services staff in what sounded like an interrogation of why they were issuing these health risk evaluations and challenging their decision to do that. And that's something that was very concerning to us.
Mm-hmm. What's at stake here for Duke Energy? If it's discovered, somehow some scientist said unequivocally that this is a coal ash problem, what's at stake here?
Well, I have the utmost confidence that we would address it promptly. I mean, let's use the Sutton plant as an example. We have evidence that demonstrated through monitoring back in 2013 that water near the ash basin was moving toward a community well. We didn't need a lawsuit. We didn't need state intervention. We took care of it. We worked with the water utility in that region to pipe a municipal water supply to that community well before they had any reasons for concern. Their water quality was never compromised. And I have the utmost confidence that the company would make the right choice. You know, that's really why we started providing bottled water to begin with. We wanted to give those folks peace of mind to make sure that they were comfortable and safe.
Aaron Culbert is the spokesperson for Duke Energy. Sam Perkins is also with us, the Catawba Riverkeeper, and Michael Tomczyk from WFAE News. We're going to continue our conversation about the health of our water and what we can believe about what's being said about its safety in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Leland Little Auctions, providing collectors and families with comprehensive auction services, specializing in fine art, jewelry, and fine wine. Details, LelandLittle.com. And Malak Jewelers, the diamond specialists at the Arboretum, a direct diamond importer dedicated to teaching customers about diamonds and fine jewelry to make an educated decision. MalakJewelers.com. Americans have accumulated $1.3 trillion in student debt. College graduates can earn more over time compared to high school graduates, but many now question the net benefits of a college degree. So, on the Diane Rehm Show, coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, the student debt crisis and plans from the presidential candidates on what to do about it. That's all upcoming. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org, search for WFAE on Facebook, or get to us through Twitter @CharlotteTalks, and we're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
On the famed Copacabana Beach, tourists and residents are flocking to take pictures in front of an Olympic rings sculpture on the sand.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
The invasive insect has been detected in 22 counties, including Catawba and Iredell, and now Lincoln.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with the Catawba Riverkeeper Sam Perkins, Michael Tomsic from WFAE News, and Aaron Culbert, spokesperson for Duke Energy. Sam, you say that groundwater is being contaminated in the area around, I guess, the Allen plant.
Yes.
Is that correct? And eventually you say that contamination will affect the surface water. How so?
Well, especially in a case like Allen, you have a narrow peninsula, and you have these coal ash ponds. We're in the South, so I have to use the food analogy of you have a setup of a pile of mashed potatoes, unlined, holding back toxic gravy, and you have it flowing out to the east to the Catawba River. And I've sampled those seeps, and you also have it flowing out west toward people's wells. And it's because these are old, unlined sites that are falling into disrepair, and that's why we also have a lot of concern, because you have Lake Wylie, that's a public drinking water reservoir, and we don't want to see a Dan River happen at any of these other sites where there are much more municipal users downstream. And so what we've done, starting in 2012 with a lawsuit against South Carolina Electric and Gas, and then we had litigation with Riverbend, Allen, and Marshall, we have seen throughout all of South Carolina, and then for 7 of the 14 Duke sites and part of another, a cleanup of the sites, which is a simple solution, the most common sense one. We've seen it work. We get updates every 6 months from South Carolina Electric and Gas because they're the most advanced on their cleanup. The arsenic levels have plummeted. In the last sampling set, they said they have not seen arsenic levels ever this low, and they have been sampling since April of 2001. And it's simple. You leave these sites unlined, they're going to leach. And it has worked at SCNG. They have not doubled people's bills. They haven't even had to raise rates because of that cleanup. And that's why throughout South Carolina and half of North Carolina, you see this happening. So it's like pulling teeth along the way, but it really is the most sensible solution given that these are next to drinking water reservoirs.
Evidently, North Carolina standards, at least according to the Coal Ash Management Act, if I understand this correctly, for hexavalent chromium, is higher at wells near coal ash ponds than elsewhere in the state. And it is higher than the federal standards. And it is the federal standards that DHHS and the governor's office have decided to go with, in spite of North Carolina law. Is that accurate? Have I summed that up correctly?
I believe that they are actually gauging those against the North Carolina groundwater standard, which is 10 parts per billion, not the 100 parts per billion. That's the federal standard.
Really, they erred on their own account by first deferring too much to the feds and saying there's a 100 part per billion standard. And then they said, oh, actually, we realize we do have a specific groundwater standard. It's, 1010 written into the 15A2L rules. But then again, you do have that language for making a calculation for anything that hasn't been explicitly calculated.
And the point is that they are now not going with the thing that their scientists who are in charge of figuring this out said we should go with.
Let me ask
That's
you
the most recent
the
standard.
The purpose of government is to protect the citizens. What's in it for the government to override the conclusions of at least two and probably more scientists in their own departments of environmental quality?
Well, it would be great if we had someone from the state here to answer that question.
I should point that we've invited them and they both declined.
Right.
Both departments
since
declined.
We don't, I'll say this. I mean, from the depositions, it seemed like the change came after some new leadership came into the Department of Health and Human Services. In both depositions, Rudo and Dr. Davies talk about how once Randall Williams, who was the new deputy secretary, came in, they had new conversations about what they had found. And at least from those depositions, there's not a clear explanation from Dr. Williams, the new deputy secretary, for why they made this change. But essentially, the change came after there was some new leadership.
So on the timeline, when Kenneth Rudo, the toxicologist who has been who has been accused of lying under oath, he initially said the water was not safe to drink, and then Randall Williams came in as the state health director, and after conversations, they decided that was an incorrect conclusion, and now the water is safe to drink.
Yes, and there may be some missing steps in there that I'm not aware of because we're still figuring this out. But I will say this. I mean, Rudo was incredibly clear about this in his deposition. He says that when the call was made to send out the new letters saying that it is safe to drink, which, again, comes down to the conversation we've been having this hour about the different levels, he says, and I will quote this for you, but this was a situation where we had no new data to say anything had improved. It was not like we had filtration systems or we had run water lines to these folks. Nothing had changed. And he goes on to say that, you know, all of a sudden we're getting asked to tell the residents, quote, that their water that we said wasn't safe was now safe.
Let me share with you some stuff that's coming while we've been talking on social media. Guy writes, I have two houses near Cliffside Ash Ponds. My test results for my well was 0.66 parts per million for hexavalent chromium. There are test results supporting that the closure of the well to the ash ponds, the closer to the well the ash ponds are, the higher the level of hexavalent chromium. Duke did not offer me water. So what is 0.66 parts per million? What does that mean?
First, I'm virtually certain that's 0.66 parts per billion. To be completely fair to Duke Energy and Good Information, it's got to be that level, which is still, I mean, you're talking almost 10 times what the calculated safe standard is. And the way this was laid out in the Coal Ash Management Act is you go out a certain distance from the sites to do testing. And so far there's been testing out 1,500 feet from the perimeter of the ponds for anyone who has a well. And in some cases, there's been some testing even farther away than that. But he may be outside of that half-mile radius.
So
the other thing that I will note, Mike, that's of interest, particularly around Cliffside, is as we have done a lot of extensive sampling of ash basin water at Cliffside itself, that is not detectable for hexavalent chromium. So there are very low levels of hexavalent chromium, but at Cliffside in particular, there is no detectable levels of hexavalent chromium in the ash basin itself.
Okay, so you're saying it's coming, if he has it, it's coming from natural sources.
Yes.
And not from you. But would you offer him water, or does he have to ask for water?
Well, fortunately, we don't have to all make those judgments anymore because the new updates to the state's coal ash law will provide a requirement for Duke Energy to extend permanent water solutions to an entire half-mile radius around each ash basin.
Okay. Sue in Salisbury, the news on this issue has been pretty confusing. I had just had a question about the depth of the private wells being tested. Are they relatively shallow, relatively deep, a mixture? I ask as a homeowner on a well, and I'm wondering if the depth of a private well matters in the testing that has been done thus far.
It's going to matter relative to where the bedrock is. I mean, it's going to depend on which individual well you look at and what she sees is shallow. I mean, some people go down into the bedrock. They go very deep to get really good quality water. Other people are more shallow, but there certainly is a sense of trespass, you know, whether it's shallow or deep, mm-hmm. that these wells have contaminated water that they're drawing from underneath their property.
I can help provide a little bit of color commentary for a question as well. If you're thinking about sort of a cross section, ash basins are relatively shallow, maybe 40 to 60 feet deep. We've got some folks in North Carolina who have to go many hundreds of feet to be able to get aquifers, a reliable drinking water supply. So you've got private wells at varying depths. We know from our testing that we are seeing higher levels of things like vanadium and hexavalent chromium the closer you get to bedrock, because it's really, really coming from that geologic source.
Michael in Asheville, are there any studies of the health of people near Duke Energy sites that indicate aberrant health effects? I was going to ask that same question this way, because these coal ash ponds have been around for over a century in some cases, and these wells have been around for a long time as well. Has there been a noticeable number of cancer cases or illness that can be attributed to high levels of hexavalent chromium or other elements that might be coming from coal ash?
There has not, and there needs to be a formal study given everything that we have learned in recent years with the data to do a health study like that to cancer impacts, to really figure that out takes a lot of resources, and it really needs to be performed.
But couldn't – I mean, it's fairly easy to see these. You could map out cases of cancer on a map and plot them around these wells. Has that not been done by anybody? Shouldn't that be done
before
we start pointing fingers at a corporation?
I mean, that would just – the only thing that would show you is correlation, which is no possible way to actually tie this is being caused by X.
Isn't that a good place to start?
Well, I think it's important to remember that cancer in the United States is so common, you know, 1 in 2 in men and 1 in 3 in women. So there does need to be some dedicated research to really answer the question. And it's something that we would certainly welcome additional information. But again, there's no evidence that supports that these people have even been exposed.
You know, you don't look for stopping fires after you're looking for the cause of an already burned out fire. Mm. You know, this is something where I would say it's not a good place to start. The place to start is when you look at something that you know through good research at the federal level causes cancer and you find it at these levels, then you take action. I wouldn't say that you need to wait to determine that a lot of people have had cancer before you take action.
Well, Oso tweets, how many homes need to be affected before there's more concern?
Well, again, I would say that's something that's already been resolved through the new state law updates. All residents within a half mile of whether they've been impacted or not will receive permanent water solutions, and we're in the process now of exploring that.
The 400 that are currently getting the bottled water, how much bigger is that number?
It would roughly double from what we can, you know, tell so far.
Why are you willing to do this? Why is Duke Energy willing to spend this money on bottled water and running municipal water lines at your expense to people who have been on well water near these coal ash ponds if you are insisting that you're not responsible?
It's a great question, Mike, and it's one that we get often. The main reason is because we want to be able to provide these neighbors peace of mind. We want to be a good neighbor, and we want to resolve this issue so that we can focus our attention on what we're all really sharing the same objective about, which is safely closing ash basins in a way that protects the environment, protects these communities, and also does so in a way that manages costs.
Yeah, I'm cynical, and so when I read a lot of language yesterday from Duke Energy that mentioned their neighbors with these wells, that to me is a red flag.
How so?
It just sounds – I'm cynical. It just sounds like we're going to put a nice – we're going to put lipstick on the pig here.
Well, I think, you know, for folks who know colleagues of mine at Duke Energy, you know, we live and work in these communities. It's mm-hmm. important for many, many reasons that we continue to support and help these communities thrive. So as we are the regulated utility, sort of the only of among all of us that's regulated in this business, we have to be successful in protecting the environment, making sure that we don't have adverse inadvertent consequences to these communities, and we have to be able to do so in a way that manages costs.
But how do we know you're not the tobacco industry?
Well, you know, I think we will only be able to earn people's trust through our actions. And it's important to us to be able to continue to support this state, the economic vitality of the state, the communities of the state, the philanthropy and the volunteerism that we do at Duke Energy. It's all really because we're committed to North Carolina.
Let's bring cost into this, because I think that, you know, that's something people are concerned about. And I heard when I was at the General Assembly, when there was House Bill 630 getting unfortunately passed, there was a lot of concern about costs from representatives and senators. Now, cleaning up the sites in South Carolina has not bankrupted much smaller utilities. It has not caused people's bills to soar. And Water E at that plant, South Carolina Electric and Gases plant, is a good bit of the way done. And we even know through this process that we have gone through that Duke Energy has performed their own calculations. And it's not going to be a $10 plus billion cleanup. It's going to be much closer to what it would cost to close these sites anyways, because it's not a free option to stabilize them in place. We're talking about a fourth of what they have said, about $2.5 billion.
We saw what happened
at all. I'm sorry, I have to just jump in there.
We have an internal document that says so.
The number right next to it says that it's $6 billion. So that's an example right there of SCLC and its clients cherry picking data to serve their motive, which is to try to drive North Carolina to the most expensive, most disruptive, and most extreme solution when it's not necessary by science.
South Carolina didn't think it was extreme.
Well, South Carolina has a fraction of the amount of ash in North Carolina. North Carolina, if you filled up Bank of America Stadium, you would fill it 55 times with the amount of coal ash that we need to manage responsibly in ash basins. So we plan to close them. We plan to do so safely and in a way that's driven by science and engineering so that we don't have to put communities through 20 or 30 years of cleanup.
We saw what happened in Flint, Michigan, when officials started using water from the Flint River in order to save money, which contained unquestionably high levels of lead. They didn't know it, but when they found out, they tried to cover it up. Officials have now switched those water sources in Flint, but the damage is done. And some see this as a criminal act. Are we witnessing another Flint here?
Well, we have seen criminal issues with this coal ash process. There was a plea deal to criminal negligence because these are very large sites and they're very old. And in some cases, it is tough to know what happened in 1960, which is why you had a corrugated metal pipe blow out at Dan River. And it's why we have a lot of concern with leaving these sites in place going on because they're unlined, they're waterfront, and we know that our waterways are increasingly prone to flooding because of stormwater issues. We just saw at Cliffside a major coal pile spill of stormwater there, and up to at least 50,000 gallons of stormwater spilled into the Broad River, and we saw no sampling after that from DEQ's part in their report.
Is part of the confusion here or part of the suspicion here the fact that for years, and it's a political hot potato, that Pat McCrory, Governor McCrory, worked for Duke Energy? If he had not worked for Duke Energy, would there be less suspicion about this?
I mean, from the standpoint of the people who live by these wells, they could probably care less what the governor's past history is. I mean, they are just confused and trying to figure out, can they drink their water?
So where does this saga go from here, Michael?
Well, the immediate one thing that has not changed and will not change until Duke provides the new water lines is these people around the well, some that we've talked to. Amy Rogers is an example. She lives in Belmont. For them, there is no change with the water is now safe to drink. They will keep using bottled water until they get a new water line because they do not trust the water.
And Michael Topsik, the reporter for WFAE News, Aaron Culbert, spokesperson for Duke Energy, and Sam Perkins is the Catawba Riverkeeper. This will not be the last time we talk about this, I'm sure. Hopefully we'll find out some definitive information that will clear all this up on the positive side of things. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever, Chris Miller, and Chico Theory. Our production associate is Jennifer.